It's Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. When was the last time you picked up an object and wondered about the person who made it? What do they look like? Where are they from? These questions are even more important when the legacy of an artist or a craftsperson is lost to history or was never recorded in the first place.
Milwaukee artist Mutope Johnson is charged with bringing ancestral African-American craftsmen to life. The DAVE Project, exploring African-American material culture, is part of the Chipstone Foundation collection, which is at the Milwaukee Art Museum. The focus of the exhibit is 19th century African-American makers of ceramics and furniture.
In this edition of Radio Chipstone, contributor Jennifer Fields asks Johnson about the tools he used to give the craftsmen faces and to create a sense of place.
What I had to do was tap into a belief system that I have, and that is that my ancestors are all around me. And these faces that ultimately that became part of the composition that you see came from that belief. You know, seeing them, feeling them, understanding that these individuals look like I do. And so when you have that kind of energy to tap into, it's a matter of consideration for the time period, what weight might have been on their shoulders, and also just impressions. And what would, you know, an older Dave look like? Because this Dave the Potter, you know, that's depicted in this painting is, he is now free. He is well beyond the age where he was in servitude. You know, no longer a slave, he sits on the porch of his daughter's house and he is telling stories to his granddaughter. That's very much like what my grandfather or grandma would have done, and we often, as children, used to listen to them.
Mutope, then you've got a handle on the image of the individual, but now you have to set this pottery, this work of art, this thing in a place and create this sense of place.
Well, one of the things that came out of each one of the objects is that after reviewing a lot of the research and the literature, when, where, how, I was able to at least talk about product as hero, because we wanted the object to be the hero. It's one thing to have an object that is in the place that you can see, you know, as a three-dimensional walk-around piece, and that's what the viewer typically does, is come in and look at a three-dimensional object, and sometimes you don't always have a context. And so what I wanted to do was to place that object in the right setting and sort of recreate a setting that at least was able for me to have this sort of iconography that spoke to imagine the place where they actually made it, and or at least in the same vicinity so that they could feel it, you know, what the maker might have felt or what the maker might have done in response to the difficulty of those surroundings. And so, I mean, you know, it's kind of a easy leap after a while, you know, because everything kind of talked to me, you know. When you think about, you know, John Hemmings, for instance, who made the Campeachy chair, he's in a workshop, you know, actually making the chair. And so that chair being near to him helps paint a picture for the viewer.
How do you combine your artistic and creative vision as a Milwaukeean with images from the past?
There are these things out there in the universe, I believe. It's my opinion that the information that's out there in the universe is meant for us to have. And if we're tuned into the universe and we have our dream catcher up, that information is going to come to us. And so for me to see the faces of these individuals, you know, came from having that kind of connection. And I just took that information and translated it into a physical presence and actually applied my impressions of them in the guise of height, weight, skin tone, perhaps quality of life or lack thereof. I mean, so there's a lot of things that I could have easily tapped into that was going through my head, and that information seemed to sync up after a period of time.
Did you feel an emotional connection to the objects and the people you were representing and recreating?
Absolutely. I mean, it's hard to not do the research and understand the stories of these individuals and not feel some kind of empathy for them, because through my understanding of who they were and the difficult times that they face, that process of feeling was translatable.
And we know, Metope, in the Dave Potts, that there are not so hidden messages. We know that from slave quilts, there were directions and hidden messages. In creating these pieces and working on this sense of place and creating these individuals' moments and times, did you add any of your own that you're willing to share?
Well, with Dave, there was a story that talked about him having a train accident. Most people, when they walk up to the Dave painting, they'll see the object, which is the hero of the painting, and they'll see the little girl, Emma, who is Dave's granddaughter, and they'll see Dave sitting in a rocking chair. But if you look a little closer, you'll see that Dave has a peg leg. And that was drawn from, you know, stories that were told that Dave had a train accident and that he, you know, got drunk one night and, you know, got hit by a train. And, of course, I seem to beg to differ considering the conditions that slaves were up under at that time, and if you ran away, you were punished. So if that were true, and Dave attempted to run away, the one way of stopping him from running away would be to punish him. And so that peg leg kind of represents a very cruel punishment that he might have faced. So that's in your face, but in a subtle way. I mean, you know, you have to look at it, it's like, wait a minute, what am I looking at? And lo and behold, there you have a little bit of truth.
As we look at the pieces, the style strikes me as WPA-esque. There's some mural qualities and aspects of it. Talk to me about style as you represent these images, these peoples, these settings, this place.
We have a reference to a time in history that says when you're talking about the early to late 1800s, to capture the tone of place and architecture and building structure and clothing, all those things are considerations when doing period pieces like this. The reference to WPA-like comes in the sense that the storytelling aspect, a lot of the WPA artists told stories, and they could show you times related to land, and times related to industry, times related to working man, working woman. And so there's that essence that's there indirectly. So it was not a conscious effort that I made. One of the things I do want to talk about that might be seldom discussed is the skin tone of all of the individuals. And so normally when you see the people in these images, they're blue casts. And so for me, that is my own way of protesting the way that we're seen. So the protest is that we're constantly judged based on skin casts, color, tonality. We do it to ourselves, but we're judged by others. And to have this blue cast now makes a paradigm shift to have you think about the blues. And that blues reference, everyone can relate to the blues. And so there's a metaphor in the guise of the skin tone of the person. And it makes you talk about race, and it makes you talk about skin color. Even if you don't do it openly, you're somehow internalizing it when you see these images. And so that's one of the things that makes that connection to the time period, because the time period is certainly centered around the indigo as a cash crop, what came out of the color blue, how it was transferred and used in the uniforms of the Civil War soldiers and the cotton plantation. And I mean, we can continue to go on and on and on.
When I look at the individuals who are in the painting, the star, the heroes of the work.
Right.
There's a pride that we don't often see when we're looking mm-hmm. at images for historical African-American people, particularly during this time period. There's a dimension of warmth. It's mm-hmm. we can see how much you care about these people right. and the results of the work.
Well, one of the things that that the curatorial team and I discussed, this was both Sarah Carter and John Brown. I told them that I would only do this if I could make these individuals dignified. That if there was no dignity, then it makes the project less interesting to me. So I could have easily, you know, added a very different approach to who they might have been, where they actually stood, what they were doing, and in addition to what they look like. And so I wanted to put them in a surrounding that gave them some dignity, and that dignity was transferred when the viewer walked up to the piece. And if they read it that way, then I did what I'm supposed to do.
And I love the fact, Metope, that when you look at them, you can see that these individuals are doing business. It's more about the ability to have a skill that's in demand rather than your individual as a body, you being the commodity. Now you have a commodity that you're selling to these people.
If there was such a thing as a business class, they had a class about them. But also I think that they were on a mission to be the best craftsperson and perhaps the best businessman or woman that they could be. And so I think when you're talking about entrepreneurship, I doubt very seriously whether any of these individuals ever thought of themselves as artists. You know, to me, I felt like the term artist being applied to these individuals would certainly be more of a construct and less of what they really believe. I think they were too busy doing the work. And if you're gonna do this kind of work, especially those who were the entrepreneurs, the ones that were enslaved and they were more task-oriented, kind of different thing. You know, when you're being told what to do or instructed what to do, you don't have that same kind of entrepreneurship spirit. But of the individuals that we see that are, in fact, entrepreneur in their practice, there's a sense of pride, not just how they conduct business, but just in the object, the making of the object. And you can see the quality of the object when you step into the room. There's no doubt about it that, you know, they love what they're doing. And that makes a big difference.
So, Metope, as we walk out of this room, mm-hmm. other than these works, mm-hmm. your works on the walls, mm-hmm. What are you leaving here?
This is about legacy. This has nothing to do with just the fact that I push paint around on a substrate. This is about what was my contribution, you know, to the project? How will it impact the viewer when they walk into the room? What do they take away from my working with an institution that also cares? And that collaboration trumps really anything that I could do alone. But for my own, out of my own mouth, I would say that I'm simply trying to leave a bit of a legacy through the work that I do.
Material culture contributor Jonifer Fields curates the Radio Chipstone series. That project is funded by the Chipstone Foundation, a decorative arts foundation whose mission is preserving and interpreting their collection, as well as stimulating research and education in the decorative arts.